And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of The Warm Down. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Irish journalist Ewan McKenna, who's written some very interesting articles about the state of sport and drugs. Ewan, welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Lovely to be on. Appreciate it.
Now, we don't really associate performance-enhancing drugs with football, do we?
We don't. That's not to say we shouldn't. In fact, there's a strong case to be made that amongst all sports, it would probably make most sense in football for a couple of reasons. Number one, that the benefits are so big compared to any other sports, particularly financial benefits. And secondly, football tends to be a closed shop. It's very difficult for journalists to get blood from a stone, essentially. A lot of soccer-specific journalists lose access as such if they go about questioning these things. So for those two reasons, it covers its tracks very well and it makes more sense. So you're right, we don't talk about it, but we ought to.
So in May, you wrote an article which I was sent probably at least a dozen times, which was the murky questions surrounding Spanish football's golden era. And in particular, it focuses on the very colourful character of Dr. Fuentes. Can you give us a little bit more information on that topic, please?
Yeah, sure. It started back in 2004. There was a cyclist for the Kelme team, a kind of a middle of the peloton rider called Jesus Manzano. And he came out in an interview and he said there was systematic doping going on within his team by this Dr. Fuentes, who was based in Barcelona. Now, it took the Spanish authorities 2 years to do anything about that. And they opened the infamous Operación Puerto, which looked into what he'd been up to. Now, what came out across this was that this just wasn't the Kelme cycling team, nor was it just cycling. You had Manzano himself saying he saw footballers come and go from Dr. Fuentes' lab. You had other cyclists like Jorge Yatschka and Tyler Hamilton come out, and they say many other athletes had been there when they were getting blood doping. But the Spanish authorities from day one tried to absolutely cover this up. They tried to protect their own cyclists, first of all, the likes of Alberto Contador. He received a letter from the clerk of the Spanish court saying there was no wrongdoing. Alejandro Valverde was another Spanish cyclist. He had to cross over the border into Italy during a Tour de France, where they nabbed him and they found that his DNA linked up with one of the blood bags. This is all stuff that the Spanish authorities could have been doing. Fuentes was brought in and he allegedly told a cellmate of his that if the truth came out and he was allowed to open up, that Spain would actually have to give back their World Cup, that team was so dirty. Obviously, that can't be verified.
I'm not just gonna leave that and keep letting you go, right? So I just want to emphasise that for everybody who's watching who might have missed that. So Fuentes told his cellmate, if the truth comes out, Spain will have to give back the 2010 World Cup. That's not insignificant.
That's what the cellmate alleges. Now, obviously, we can't prove that, but that's what the cellmate came out and said. Worse, Fuentes goes back to court then, and he said, look, you have the list of all my ledgers here. You have all these blood bags. I'll tell you what I can do. I can tell you who every blood bag here belongs to. I can match them all up, and we can have this long list of tennis players, athletes, cyclists, and soccer players. All of them. The judge turned around, and she goes, no. She said, sorry, that goes against doctor-patient confidentiality. And worse than that, she ordered that all the blood bags be destroyed. Now, the blood bags ultimately weren't destroyed. They were eventually handed over to WADA last year. But it had taken so long for them to be handed over that they're not allowed legally go back and look at who they belong to because it's taken so long. So we will never know. But what we do know in the meantime was, for example, that there was this French journalist for L'Equipe, Stéphane Mandard, who went to Dr. Fuentes' lab or his office in Las Palmas in Spain. And he claims, now he was subsequently sued by Barcelona and Real Madrid for a nominal fee. He claims that he was shown all the ledgers belonging to Fuentes. He wasn't allowed to take them with him, thus he couldn't prove it. But he wrote that within those ledgers, that Fuentes had year-long plans for Barcelona, Real Madrid, Real Betis, Sevilla, and Valencia. Now, the Spanish police subsequently, instead of raiding that place in Las Palmas, which was where all the evidence this journalist Mandard said was, they raided Fuentes' office in Madrid, where there was absolutely nothing. And why? Doesn't add up. So, I mean, in football, we often talk about it's very difficult to find the smoking gun. Here, the smoking gun was handed to the Spanish authorities. And in the midst of all this, what you had was Real Sociedad came out, and their president said, yeah, we were on the books of the books of Dr. Fuentes. We were doping through him. So if you are, and we can only speculate, and there's no subsequent proof, but if you were to believe Real Madrid and Barcelona and the elites of Spanish football around that time, what it would take was, you have to believe Fuentes only doped cyclists, even though he said otherwise. You have to believe Jesus Manzano, Jorg Yatschka, and Tyler Hamilton all didn't really see what they saw coming and going from Fuentes' office. You have to believe that Real Sociedad were the only bad egg in all of this, which is quite typical of a lot of sport, in that we catch the guys at the back of the pack. We catch the guy coming 10th in the 100 metres, but we just believe that Usain Bolt and all these are clean. Why would that be the case? Barcelona even subsequently hired a guy called Luis Garcia del Moral, who was the US postal doctor around the time of Lance Armstrong. We have to believe he changed his morals completely. We have to believe Stefan Mandard, the French journalist, risked his career and his reputation by lying. You have to believe the Spanish authorities just didn't think there was anything there. They knew better than everyone else. You have to believe Spain and their top soccer clubs are just better morally than everyone else, and that it's all just a big misunderstanding. We even had Graham Hunter a couple of years ago on the Irish show Off the Ball coming out, and he was talking about, I believe, let me find the quote here for you. I believe it was Xavi he was talking about at the time. It was in 2012. And he came out and he said he was taking human growth hormones that got him through this and last year, and he was pressed on that again. And he said he was doing it very publicly. And Hunter seemed stunned because he was told by the presenter, well, wait a minute, this is doping. And he said, well, if he's doing it very publicly, if that's the case, then Barcelona are in big trouble. He subsequently came out the next day and retracted what was a very clear statement. So there's a lot of red lights here, an awful lot of red lights here. An awful lot of people would have to have done lied, thought they saw things they didn't see, etc., etc. And for me, that doesn't add up.
I think anyone with a functioning brain knows it doesn't add up. The question is, how is this going to be uncovered? How is this going to come to the fore? Are we going to have to wait for someone to make an admission? I mean, Lance Armstrong famously passed over 200 drug tests over a number of years, was never found guilty on the back of a failed test. It was the testimony of others which then led him to come out and admit this himself. And like I said, Lance Armstrong was held up as a shining beacon for everybody. Cycling's got this reputation of being a dirty sport. I come from a rugby league background, and I also cover mixed martial arts. I know both of those are heavily doped sports. I know people are strength and conditioning coaches for football sides, and I've spoke to them about it. And I've tried to speak to them off the record and say, what do you think's going on? Now, I don't know if they're just trying to be protecting their own reputation, but I can't find anybody in the game that's willing to admit or even suggest that there's an issue in football. Do you think it's widespread? And do you think we're ever going to see this come out?
I think it's probably quite common. You get a kind of a level of football fanatic who only sees the glitz and glamour and the heroes and everything that's sold to them through marketing. And they say, oh, the drug wouldn't make a difference in football. It's a skill game. It's a team game, all of this. As if strength, as if endurance, as if speed, as if recovery time make absolutely no difference. And what I say to them is, well, why then does soccer have a long and questionable history around drugs? You go back 1954 World Cup, Ferenc Puskás suspected that the West Germans were doping. Hungarians went into the West German dressing room afterwards and they found syringes lying all over the place. Ferruccio Mazzallo wrote in his autobiography of the great Inter team in the 60s that Helenio Herrera was doping his teams. He said he thought they were amphetamines. Ajax received pills in the 70s. The great German teams did as well. And they said they didn't run out of oxygen. Into the 80s, you have Maradona, they say in the early 90s. Then you have Gary Neville talking about England teams lining up for pills they didn't know what they were. The French under-21 doctor in 1998 said he thought the French senior team that won the World Cup were dirty. And that was at a time when EPO was at its absolute zenith. And then you're into this Spanish era in the 2000s. You're also into the Greek era around that European Championships that they won around the same time as the Olympics. So, I mean, it's always been that. Now, your other question, does it come out? No, I don't think it ever will. I see this in other sports more and more in that they're too valuable for their biggest stars to fail. There's two problems with anti-doping. One is that A, the drugs are so far ahead of the actual anti-doping methods. So that's one problem. I mean, they believe there's 25, 30 different types of EPO coming out of China right now. How do you test for all of those? There's ahead of it. The second problem on that is the testers. Not, you look at the Russian doping around the Olympics. It didn't really take a whole lot of James Bond villains to pass vials of urine through a hole in the wall to trouble WADA. And WADA, for example, I've talked to a lot of people about this who believe they're just a PR arm for the International Olympic Committee. So you have these major sports, be it the IAAF in athletics, be it the UCI in cycling, FIFA in soccer, the International Olympic Committee. They're brands, they're businesses, they're worth millions. Of what kind of business wants to sabotage itself? If Usain Bolt and Mo Farah came out tomorrow as dirty, the Olympic athletics are ruined. If Chris Froome is done, cycling is ruined. And in the past, the only things that come out, there have been journalists doing great work, but even with Lance Armstrong, if you look at David Walsh and Paul Kimmich, they only got so far with that. It actually took the intervention of the FBI to get it down. So much like with Blatter and FIFA, it took the feds to come in. This is outside their jurisdiction. It's a Spanish issue, an Italian issue, an English issue, whatever country we're talking about. And I don't think the will is there. If you want to go back to Spain, you look at the political connections of Barcelona with the Catalan movement. You look at Real Madrid's connections to the royal family of Spain, all these things. Why would they, and the value of soccer to their economy too. So why would you bring down this from within? It doesn't make sense. Too many powerful people have too much to lose.
You talk about the will for federations to not sabotage themselves and to not put themselves in this negative light, but the UFC is actually doing some phenomenal work with this. They brought in USADA to test their athletes above and beyond what some of the other sports like boxing are doing in this arena, and they are finding countless. And now there's almost like a meme going around in the UFC. You've got the pre-USADA bodies and the post-USADA bodies of fighters, and the differences are stark. And it used to be the thing where every UFC fighter you would speak to would say, I'm not on it, but everyone's on it. And it seems like the introduction of USADA has really properly taken it out, because the testing's random and it's quite in-depth. What I don't understand what the motive was for the UFC to do this. There's no chance that we're going to see, as you said, we're not going to see UEFA want to do this to the Spanish clubs or the Italian clubs or the English clubs to make this scandal happen. They've got enough scandals already to worry about, haven't they, with the bribery and all the other things that's going on. If you don't think this is going to come out, where does this end? Because it doesn't end well, usually, performance-enhancing drugs. There's always something happens with this. What's the end game here?
Well, it's interesting. You look at, well, USADA, first of all, are an interesting one. And that USADA are not like UCAD in your neck of the woods. That USADA are actually a private company, for profit, who are paid and aim to make money out of drug testing. There's a couple of other anti-doping agencies in America that are far more thorough. There was some stuff about Floyd Mayweather getting drips in boxing a few years ago, and about how USADA were basically being paid more by boxing authorities so that they would do less testing than the other anti-doping agencies. And you look at their head guy, Travis Tygart. He was obviously involved in the Lance thing, but he was handed documents about Lance years before he had to actually investigate it properly, and he did nothing about it. In fact, when Floyd Landis blew a whistle on Lance, he begged, he said, I will give you all the information on Lance to Tygart, and one condition, you don't make this about one guy, you make this about the entire sport. Tiger disappears and he makes it purely about Lance to blow up his own reputation and to look good in front of the US Congress. Where does it end in soccer? I think it just continues on. I think it's always been happening and I don't think it's going to stop. What came out in cycling was a different type of doping, in that when guys were getting, if they got sick, we can't prove this, but the likes of Pantani and stuff over EPO in the late 90s, it scared people, it spooked people. Guys were dropping off early. And EVO, for Dutch example,
cyclist passed away a little bit suspiciously, and that's what scared people, wasn't it?
There was. Now, there will be some people who said it's not that, but for example, I know one Irish athlete a few years back who was on a camp with a guy who was taking EPO, and the guy who was on EPO had to wake up every 4 hours and skip throughout the night because it was turning his blood to soup, basically, and if he fell asleep and his heart rate got too low, he couldn't process it. Now, I'm not so sure EPO is a drug for football. I don't know if steroids are better. Doctors will tell you that more. But we haven't had any examples of anything like that in soccer. And it is those severe, extreme and tragic examples when young athletes are risking their health. That's when the issues start. I've spoken to people about this. And it's an awkward one. I mean, do you just legalise doping? And to what degree? I don't know. I've
performance enhancing. Sleep is performance enhancing. Hydration is performance enhancing. It's what makes... whatever enhances your protein and a good diet is performance enhancing. So where's the line get drawn and who decides what the line is? That's the issue, I think, is on one hand, yeah, maybe legalize it, but...
If you were a cricketer and he gets laser eye surgery, is that not basically changing him from what his born self was into something enhanced by science to make him better at his sport? Stan Collymore often talks about caffeine pills before he goes out for a run. They're popular being passed around dressing rooms in the Premier League. So where do you draw the line? If you talk about, well, you can't legalise it because of the risks involved to athletes, those risks are already there. And they're there more so because it's the poor guys who are coming at the back of the pack who are trying to catch up and doing drugs by themselves, whereas the rich superstar athletes have expert doctors around them to make sure nothing goes wrong. So it is an awkward one, and part of me thinks it's human nature to cheat anyway. And I say that from a kid who plays Monopoly and his mate goes to the toilet. He throws down a few extra hotels on whatever street he owns. The school sports day, who doesn't try and kind of inch ahead at the start line of any race? The guy filing his taxes, who doesn't try and write off as much as they possibly can? It is human nature. And then with athletes, it's more so because athletes are far more alpha than me or you or most people and more driven to win. So they'll go further with it. So I do think it will always happen. I do think sports are more valuable now in terms of money. Therefore, they become more insulated because they can't bring down these great institutions that are worth so much to more people. And I also think there's a level of, I suppose, fan, we call it, a kind of the football tourist, this sort of thing. Shacks up in Old Trafford once a year for a game on their holidays, etc. And they're sold the Premier League when they go back home to the Far East or to Africa or to wherever else in Europe. And all they want to know is about the heroes. I remember landing on a plane about 4 years ago in Kuala Lumpur. And we landed just before Barcelona landed. I was on holidays, nothing to do with work. But there was a load of locals waiting for Messi and the Barcelona team to arrive. And I saw a grown man push a child out of the way so he could get a photo with a cardboard cutout of Messi. Do you really think these people want to know about doping? Do they want their heroes? Football, I suppose, is an escape for a lot of people from the dredge of day-to-day life. So if you start ruining that for people, where do they go then?
I'm sure you have. I'm going to ask this to the audience more than yourself, because I'm just going to assume you have. But there was a Netflix documentary, and I've actually spoken to the director, Brian Fogel, who is coming on this podcast at some point. I'm trying to arrange that. If you think that widespread doping couldn't be supported by the state, like the Spanish government wouldn't support it, this, that, and the other, you need to go and watch Icarus and see what's going on with what happened at Sochi and the Russian games there. Now, we are on the eve, pretty much, of the World Cup in Russia. And Russia are currently ranked 66th in the world, the second lowest ranked team in this thing. Are we expecting this Russian team to just turn up like absolute robots out of nowhere? Because there were soccer players mentioned in the Icarus film, wasn't there, that there was doping involved with those. Do we expect this Russian team to just outrun, outwork, and outmuscle everybody at this World Cup, or should we not be surprised if that happens?
If they were on something, it wouldn't surprise me. But if to get them from the level they're at naturally to any level of competition, it would take some newfangled drug we've never heard of, I think. But I don't think it's just state-sponsored. I mean, I love Fancy Bears, the hackers who are linked to the KGB, because the West has this thing, and no harm, Russians were state-sponsoring doping, we know that, but they finger point as if we're holier than thou in our part of the world. The only difference is, much like general society, we've privatized our doping. Britain has privatized its doping. America has privatized its doping. I mean, look at Britain since the 2012 Olympics. Look at the questions around Mo Farah. Look at the questions around Team Sky, Chris Froome, all these heroes. It's just that it's been done on a more privatized level and the will still isn't there. And even I'm Irish. I remember back to 1996, the swimmer Michelle Smith, who was eventually, she won 3 golds and a silver in Atlanta out of nowhere. Now, legally, she was allowed to keep those medals, but she was banned afterwards for other stuff around, there was so much whiskey in her urine that it would have killed an elephant around a test once. She basically, they reckon she poured whiskey into the test to kill any trace of anything. But Irish people had a hard time admitting that. And people find it very, very difficult to look in the mirror. People in Ireland and England would go, oh, the Russians are bad. Oh, they're bad. Oh, Morocco is bad. Oh, Jamaica is bad. When it comes to looking at Irish or English athletes, couldn't be us. Couldn't be us. We're made of better moral fibre when we're not. So, yeah, Russia do it on a state level. Others do it on a semi-state level and others do it on a privatised level. But the results are all the same in that athletes are doped.
We have just announced a brand new, shiny transfer, Manchester United. That's Fred from Shakhtar Donetsk. And let's look in the mirror at this one, because Fred was banned for doping in 2016, after a failed test at the Copa America in 2015. He was given a year sentence for a diuretic. Do you know anything in particular about this case?
Not a huge amount, because even in Brazil, where I'm based at the minute, it wasn't that high profile, and because it dragged on so long. The sample was collected in the 2015 Copa America, and the drug, I believe, was for high blood pressure. And CONMEBOL, the South American Federation, gave him a one-year suspension that FIFA enforced in early 2016. WADA came along then and said it should be a two-year suspension, backdated. And I believe he was cleared in July 2017 by all organisations for whatever reason.
Yeah, he missed and 6 months, I think. Back. I think he was banned internationally for the 12 months, backdated to the actual test, but he only missed 6 months of domestic football.
That plays into an odd. I mean, why are different people saying different bans? Why is he cleared? Why, what evidence changed? You look at it with Paulo Guerrero, head of the World Cup for cocaine that he said was in some cocoa leaves he took in Peru. And it plays back into FIFA. Remember Der Spiegel, the German newspaper, they looked at doping around 2015. And WADA came up with 149 failed tests in soccer that year. But they contacted FIFA, and FIFA said there were 78. So where did the other 71 tests go, etc.? And FIFA had a long list of clearing people for various things and kind of come up with excuses for different stuff. And they said the player was poor in one case because the substance was from an injection earlier in the season. As if that mattered when he was caught. Like, why did he get that injection for a banned substance earlier in the season? What does it matter when it was traced to, etc.? So it kind of plays into, and as I say, I don't know the ins and outs of the Fred case, but it does play into why different organisations are demanding different bans, why he's cleared at the end of it, why he only served 6 months when FIFA, CONMEBOL said 1 year, when WADA said 2 years. It just, a lot of it doesn't add up. I mean, these things, I often think these organisations, I think they think people are idiots. And I think if they provide enough smoke and mirrors and confusion around it, the people will just go, that must be right. When what should be the case around these cases is absolute clarity.
We've also seen examples of the English Football Association covering up failed drug tests. And these only become public knowledge by accident often. I think Berahino was outed by his manager at the end of the last summer transfer window when someone was like, what's going on with him? And he's moving. They said, "Oh, he's serving this sort of shadow ban, where the FA bans you, but they doesn't make it public." that again is an example of an organisation that's trying to keep the door closed on a problem and not being honest and open with the general public about what's going on. The FA actually publishes lists of failed drugs tests, but if you go, which is public, and you can go and find these. But on those lists, it'll say, it either says unidentified or NA for the name and the club of the player. What is the point in publishing a list of failed tests if you're not going to say who and which club have failed all these tests? How is the general public and reporters able to spot trends in this? If there's one team constantly failing drug tests, we don't know, do we? These only come out when a player gets identified, usually by accident, that's going on. I don't think it's right, and I don't think it's what a governing body, which, you know, with all of the fair play things that the FA preaches, should be doing. And whether it's recreational or performance enhancing, a failed drug test to me is a failed drug test, and they should be treated exactly the same.
Yeah, I mean, and it is an example of pretending to do a lot when you're actually doing little. And the FA aren't the only, they're not the only sporting federation to do this. I know, for example, tennis, the International Tennis Federation are infamous for doing this, in that if a guy takes 6 months off and he says he's injured, he could well have been doping. We have absolutely, and he could have served his ban, but he says, oh, wait a minute, now I'm back, I'm better, blah, blah, blah. And it doesn't ruin his brand, it doesn't ruin his image, it doesn't ruin the tennis brand. And tennis use it as an example to turn around and go, well, wait a minute, we're catching people. Well, who did you catch? What did you catch him for? Where was the punishment? We don't know. So it is that example of doing barely enough, but having something to go by and say, well, look, we're testing, we're doing this. And football testing is done on a very low level compared to other sports. There just isn't the amount of tests, there just isn't the interest. Across Europe and the major leagues, football testing is extremely low compared to other sports when you think with the financial backing it has, if they wanted to do something about it, that it would be much higher. But then again, as I say, that comes back to it. What do they want to do something about? Football is booming. It's taking over the world. Other sports can't get any media attention. You open a newspaper and page after page after page of boring stories of Mourinho saying nothing is headlines, whereas the interesting stories are buried at the back. So why would they want to put negative attention on themselves when they're getting so much positive attention?
Ewan, this has been fantastic. Really enjoyed having a little chat here with you. I suggest you guys go and check out Ewan's work. I'll throw a link to your Twitter in the description and also a link to that particular article talking about the Spanish dirty secret, and see if you guys go and have a look at that. But I want to hear from you guys as well. What do you think? Is there a cover-up in football? Is that right? I don't think it's right. But let me know in the comments. Once again, Ewan, thank you for joining me. This is a fascinating subject, which I think is going to rumble on until somebody has got the balls to blow the doors off this and really tell everybody and the public what is going on. I'll see you in the next one.